Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 4, text 2. And before we get right into it, can anybody see the time? Because I can't make it out from here. What does that say? Okay, so please, the timekeeper, please make note of that. Because everybody knows I chant a very quick Jairata Madhava and everything, so looks like the kirtan went over time. So if I'm talking at 8:15, don't get cranky with me. I got an extra few minutes. Okay, so text 2. Thank you. Shonaku vacha. Sutta-sutta-mahabhaga Bhadano-vadatambara Katam bhagavatim punyam Yadaha bhagavanchuka Shonakuvacha Sutta-sutta-mahabhaga Bhadano-vadatambara Katam bhagavatam punyam Yadaha bhagavanchuka Shonakuvacha Sutta sutta mahabhaga Vadano vadatam vada Katam bhagavatim punyam Yadaha bhagavanchuka. Shonaku vacha. Vaishnavis. Shonaguvacha. Oh, sorry. Shonaka. Shonaka. Uvacha said. Sutta sutta. O Suta Goswami, Mahabhaga, the most fortunate, Bada, please speak, Na, unto us, Bhadatam, of those who can speak, Bada, respected, Katam, message, Bhagavatam, of the Bhagavatam, Punyam, pious, yet which, aha, said, Bhagavan, greatly powerful, Shuka, Sri Sukadev Goswami. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Shonaka said, O Suta Goswami, you are the most fortunate and respected of all those who can speak and recite. Please relate the pious message of Srimad Bhagavatam, which was spoken by the great and powerful sage Sukadev Goswami. Purport. Suta Goswami is twice addressed herein by Shonaka Goswami out of great joy, because he and the members of the assembly were eager to hear the text of Bhagavatam uttered by Sukadev Goswami. They were not interested in hearing it from a bogus person who would interpret it in his own way to suit his own purpose. Generally, the so-called Bhagavatam reciters are either professional readers or so-called learned impersonalists who cannot enter into the transcendental personal activities of the Supreme Person. Such impersonalists twist some meanings out of the Bhagavatam to suit and support impersonalist views, and the professional readers at once go to the 10th canto to misexplain the most confidential part of the Lord's pastimes. Neither of these reciters are bona fide persons to recite Bhagavatam. Only one who is prepared to present Bhagavatam in the light of Sukadev Goswami, and only those who are prepared to hear Sukadev Goswami and his representative, are bona fide participants in the transcendental discussion of Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Ganatamananda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So I'd like to thank everybody who's here. Hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam class, that's everybody who's physically present here and all those who are listening on the internet. That's everybody benefits from hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. But I think that those who take the trouble to come and be physically present in the class get extra bhakti points. So, Hare Krishna. Thank you, one and all. So, excuse me for not going, you know, taking the Sanskrit words one by one at the beginning. It just very seemed like a very simple verse, very simple Sanskrit, so I just went right into chanting it directly. So here in this translation and purport, the discussion is about bona fides. Who's bona fide to recite the Srimad Bhagavatam? Who's bona fide to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam? And there's a lot of different considerations. Certainly, Prabhupada makes two points here in his purport that definitely those who are not bona fide to hear the recite the Srimad Bhagavatam are those who are trying to twist some impersonal meaning out of it, or those who are just doing it as a livelihood. You know, it's going right to the 10th canto, where those activities of Krishna, the intimate pastimes of Krishna, the gopis are being described, and cashing in on people's attraction to those kind of, misunderstanding those activities in a sensual way. So they're not qualified to be reciters of the Bhagavatam. And, but in general, who's bona fide? You know, who's bona fide to be a reciter? Who's bona fide to be a hearer of the Srimad Bhagavatam? So I was thinking about that. There's so many, you know, what's the qualification? And particularly I was thinking of it in relation to ourselves. You know, what would be the most important qualification? And obviously, there's so many different points that could be raised. But I found one, a purport, which I thought nicely described what I think is the basic qualification for being a bona fide candidate to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, being somebody who's going to benefit from hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. What do you have to do to be eligible to benefit spiritually by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam? So this purport describes the basic qualification. This is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, chapter 19, text 156. Prabhupada says, one's devotional attitude increases in the association of a Vaishnava. Tandera Seva Bhakti Sannivas, Janame Janame Hoy Eyabilas. By his personal example, Narottam Das Thakur stresses that a devotee must always remember to please his predecessor Acharya. The Goswamis are represented by one's spiritual master. One cannot be an Acharya without following strictly in the disciplic succession of the Acharyas. One who is actually serious about advancing in devotional service should desire only to satisfy the previous Acharyas. One should always think of oneself as a servant of the Acharyas. And thinking this, one should live in the society of Vaishnavas. Okay, so live in the society of Vaishnavas, period. So 2 points. One is one should always be thinking how to please the spiritual master who's in the, Acharya and disciplic succession. And in the very last sentence, it says, one should live in the society of Vaishnavas. Those are the two very important qualifications. Prabhupada goes on to say, however, if one thinks he has become very mature and can live separate from the association of Vaishnavas and thus gives up all the regulative principles due to offending a Vaishnava, one's position becomes very dangerous. Giving up the regulative principles and living according to one's whims is compared to a mad elephant which by force uproots the bhakti lata. So now we're hearing about how one becomes disqualified from hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. If you do this, you're disqualifying yourself. You're not going to be able to hear and get the benefit of hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. And specifically that means leaving the association of the devotees, giving up practicing the regulative principles, living in the association of the devotees. You're disqualifying yourself from hearing and benefiting from hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada goes on to say, it's compared to the mad elephant which by force uproots the bhakti lata and breaks it to pieces. So that's, of course, the metaphor that's presented in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I guess the Srimad Bhagavatam as well, the devotional, it's like a creeper. But by doing this activity, by giving up the regulative principles and moving out of the association of the devotees, it's like you're uprooting that creeper. And everybody knows what happens when you uproot a creeper. It dies. It's actually, from the moment you uproot it, that's it. It's finished. Prabhupada goes on to say, in this way, the bhakti lata shrivels up. Such an offense is especially created when one disobeys the instructions of the spiritual master. This is called gurur avagya. The devotee must be therefore very careful not to commit offenses against the spiritual master by, once again, disobeying his instructions. As soon as one is deviated from the instructions of the spiritual master, the uprooting of the bhakti lata begins, and gradually the leaves dry up. So whether they dry up gradually or quickly, the idea is that once that creeper is uprooted, that's it. It's dead. Just like once a person dies, their body may decompose quickly or slowly, but it doesn't matter. They're dead. And so you're finished. So really, it's a very important point here. This is the basic qualification or the basic bona fide to be able to benefit hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. We have to be following, living in the association, ideally, as much as possible, living in the association of the devotees and trying to follow the instructions of the spiritual master, performing the regulative principles like that. And so we've heard in this purport, what the result will be if one doesn't do that. And of course, then we should, in all fairness, we should present, to balance it, what happens if you do it? Well, if you do follow the instructions of the spiritual master by following the regulative principles and living in the association of the devotees, we'll reawaken our dormant love for Krishna. Yeah, there's a famous verse, Nichasita Krishna Prema Shabhi Kabinaya Shravanade Sude Chitte Kodada. The pure love for Krishna is within. It's not to be gained from any outside source. And Shravanade Sude Chitte, it begins with devotional, it's awakened. Kordia Udaya, by engaging in devotional service, Shravanadi, beginning with hearing. You see? So if we live in the association of the devotees and we participate in the program Prabhupada's given us, then Shravanadi Sudha Kordia Udaya, this pure love of Krishna, which is lying dormant within us, will be awakened. Right? And everything Prabhupada's given us is actually designed as a means to that end. The whole program, everything, all the instructions he's given us, that's the goal, to reawaken our dormant love for Krishna. And every part of the program is designed to facilitate or help us make progress towards that goal right from the very beginning of the day. The first thing we do, okay, maybe not the very first thing we do, but one of the first things we do is we come together and for Mangalarti, okay, rising early, you know, taking bath and putting on clean clothes and coming for Mangalarti. And we chant the Guru Vastakam prayers. So, okay, well, what does chanting Guru Vastakam prayer have to do with, you know, developing your love for God? I mean, how does that? It has a lot to do with developing your love for God. Listen to this. This was just, you know, came to mind this morning when I was chanting, and I went over to the cabinet over there and got the book, and I found this. This is a statement by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who's the author of that song Sri Sri Guru Vastaka that we sing every morning, and he says, "One who with great care and attention loudly recites this beautiful prayer to the spiritual master during the Brahma Muhurta obtains direct service to Krishna, the Lord of Vrindavan, at the time of his death." Okay? So, in other words, there's a benefit, a great benefit. See? All these things we're doing, they have great spiritual benefit. In previous classes, I've mentioned about, you know, the importance of worshiping Tulsi and chanting Japa in the presence of Tulsi, you know, things Prabhupada said about that. And here's something about, you know, attending Mangalarti and loudly, as he says here, loudly reciting this beautiful prayer to the spiritual master. The benefit will be that one will obtain direct service to Krishna, the Lord of Vrindavan, at the time of death. So, does anybody not want direct service to the Lord of Vrindavan? No, of course not. We all do. So, good idea to come and do this. And in general, that's, you know, specific, but in general, there's the benefit of engaging in these activities. We'll start from, you know, reawakening our dormant love for Krishna and being elevated to the platform of pure devotional service. Another way that's, you could say the same thing, there's in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavatam here, of this first canto, there's the a nice description of Narada Muni was asked by Srila Vyasadeva to tell Srila Vyasadeva more about his personal life. Because in the fifth chapter, you know, Narada Muni answered, refresh everybody's memory or coming attraction, Vyasadeva, after, you know, doing so much work compiling different Vedic literatures, was feeling still not completely satisfied. And he himself figured it out, what the problem was, that he hadn't directly glorified Krishna. And then Narada Muni, his spiritual master, appeared on the scene and confirmed that. And Vyasadeva asked Narada Muni some questions, and then Narada Muni gave some amazing instructions on devotional service to Srila Vyasadeva, and that's the fifth chapter of this first canto. And then after hearing those, Vyasadeva was so impressed, like, wow, what an incredible spiritual master I have. And he was like really inspired hearing Narada Muni preach to him like that. And we will be too over the next couple of weeks when we hear these amazing instructions that Narada Muni gave Vyasadeva. So Vyasadeva asked Narada Muni to tell him something about his personal life. So Narada Muni obliged, and he described to him how he started off in his previous life, in like a previous day of Lord Brahma. He was the son of a maidservant. His mother was just, you know, ordinary woman, no father's mention. And she was serving at a Brahmin school. She just was like a menial servant at a Brahmin school. Narada Muni was there too. He mentioned at the time that he tuned into the, you know, where he kind of like starts the story. He's about 5 years old. So, you know, he was there, and the sages were there, and during the rainy season, and he would hear them discuss Krishna philosophy, and he would serve them in, you know, just in a menial way. In lectures, Prabhupada would say, you know, like, boy, get this plate, or, you know, wash the plate, or get this, bring this to me, or like, you know, like that, menial service. And he would hear them discussing the philosophy. He also got to eat the remnants of their food at least once. I can't remember regularly, but I think it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam at least once. Anyway, he got a lot of mercy from them. You know, he got a lot of blessings from them. And then It doesn't specifically mention it, but, you know, I've read the thing over and over again. I get the feeling that the rainy season was over, you know, and then the Bhaktivedantas, or these sages, left. So there he was at the, you know, at the Brahmin school. His mother was, that's where she resided. That's where she lived. So he was there with her. He was 5 years old, and she went out to milk a cow, and she got bit in the leg by a snake, and she died. You see? And then Narada Muni, you know, went off. Anyway, I'm going to jump ahead here. So we all pretty much know the story. Narada Muni went off, and he eventually wound up meditating on Krishna in a forest. I guess he said it's described. He headed to the north. So whether he made it all the way to the Himalaya Mountains or not, I don't know. But he, at one point, he stopped and he was meditating, and he saw Krishna. And he was meditating as he was instructed, as he'd heard from the Bhaktivedantas. You know, and he actually saw Krishna within his heart, and he was like ecstatic. You know, it was like completely satisfied and fulfilled. But then the meditation broke, and then he couldn't see Krishna either. You know, within or without, and he thought, okay, well, I guess I got distracted there. Let me try again. So, you know, got in his position or whatever he did. That doesn't actually describe in detail exactly what he did to meditate. It just said he meditated. So whatever he did the first time, he tried it again. And he, you know, gave it his best shot. Couldn't do it. Couldn't see Krishna. And he tried, you know, no matter what he did, he couldn't make it happen again. He couldn't see Krishna any further. And then, but Krishna could see that, you know, meanwhile, it's, you know, 5 years older, or maybe a little older now, you know, it doesn't say, but, so Krishna spoke to him. You know, Krishna actually, he heard a voice, and he could understand that it was Krishna speaking to him. And what Krishna told him was that, I'll read it to you. There's actually just four brief statements that Krishna made to Narada Muni at that time, and they're very, interesting. So, said the Lord spoke, "I regret that during this lifetime you will not be able to see me anymore. Those who are incomplete in service and who are not completely free from all material taints can hardly see me. O virtuous one, you have only once seen my person, and this is just to increase your desire for me, because the more you hanker for me, the more you'll be freed from all material desires." He said, then Krishna goes on to say, "By service of the absolute truth, even for a few days, a devotee attains firm and fixed intelligence in me. Consequently, he goes on to become my associate in the transcendental world after giving up the present deplorable material worlds." So this is the point that I was leading up to, that this is a result of engaging in devotional service. This is Lord Sri Krishna himself here speaking to Narada Muni. And what is he telling him? He's telling him that by service of the absolute truth, even for a few days, a devotee attains firm and fixed intelligence in me. Consequently, he goes on to become my associate in the transcendental world after giving up the present deplorable material world. So that's a result of engaging in devotional service, that you go on to become an associate of Krishna in the transcendental, or Narayan, or wherever you wind up, Vaikuntha or Goloka Vrindavan, but generally the followers of Lord Chaitanya and the Sankirtan movement go to Goloka Vrindavan. But you wind up, as an associate of the Lord and in the transcendental world after giving up this deplorable material world. But now, here's something interesting. Notice how Krishna says in his statement, says, even for a few days, by service of the absolute truth, even for a few days, a devotee attains that. But in the very next thing he says, he says, intelligence engaged in my devotion cannot be thwarted at any time. Even at the time of creation, as well as at the time of annihilation, your remembrance will continue by my mercy. And in his purport to that, Prabhupada says, devotional service rendered to the personality of Godhead never goes in vain. Since the personality of Godhead is eternal, intelligence applied in his service or anything done in relation is also permanent. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that such transcendental service rendered unto the personality of Godhead accumulates birth after birth. So as soon as I read that sentence, I thought, wait a second, I'm getting changed up here. I just heard Krishna say one verse ago that if I engage in service of the absolute truth, even for a few days, I'm going to go on to become an associate of his in the transcendental world. But here Prabhupada in the purport is saying that this devotional service to the personality of God has to accumulate birth after birth. Sounds like there's a little incongruency of time here. So then Prabhupada goes on to say, when the devotee is fully mature, the total service counted together makes him eligible to enter into the association of the personality of Godhead. Such accumulation of God's service is never vanquished but increases fully till matured. So anyway, Prabhupada gave, that's the correct understanding, the way Prabhupada described it there. It's not like Krishna's trying to mislead Narada Muni here, but you have to, you know, understand it in the proper perspective there. Even Krishna does say, consequently, he goes on to become my associate in the transcendental world. He doesn't say it happens immediately. You know, what he does say is, even after a few days, a devotee attains firm and fixed intelligence, but he goes on to become my associate in the transcendental world. You know, that doesn't necessarily. So it's a process. It's a process. You know, it's a cultivation. But as Prabhupada mentions here, and he refers to that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Neha bikama nastosti prachavayo navijite svalpamapyasa dharma shatraya te mahatovayata. In this endeavor, there's no loss of diminution. And, you know, whatever progress we make now, we're not going to have to make later. You know, it accumulates. The service accumulates. And we're just, with every day we're moving, with every devotional activity we perform, with every little bit of time and energy we put into our devotional service, we're getting that much closer to, you know, pure devotional service and being eligible to go back home, back to Godhead. So that's something to be encouraged about. And if there's some reverse, something doesn't, you know, quite go according to plan, then which is inevitably, everybody experiences that, we all experience that, you know, some tests or just whatever, then we could follow in the footsteps of Narada Muni. And following the footsteps of Narada, getting back to where I left off in the story, remember I said I'm going to jump ahead, and I'm going to jump back. Narada Muni, when his mother got bitten by the snake, what did he do? You know, this is really very instructive. He didn't, didn't become an atheist. He didn't think, well, how could, you know, there can't be any God, because how could he do this to me? I'm just a 5-year-old boy, and all I had is my mother, and I'm living out here in the middle of nowhere at some Brahmin school, and now what? You know, how could there be a... You know? No, he didn't think like that, you know. He was fortunate enough to hear the Bhaktivedantas discuss the philosophy, and even though he's just only 5 years old, obviously he understood a certain amount of that. And what he said was, this is how he took it, he makes a statement. He says, I took this... And referring to his mother being bitten by the snake and dying as a result of that, he says, I took this as the special mercy of the Lord, who always desires benediction for his devotees. And so thinking, I headed north. That's how he took it. He took it as special mercy of the Lord, who always desires benediction for his devotees. And off he went. And he it wasn't just lip service, and he really meant it too, because in subsequent verses it describes how he went through different towns and villages and mines and agricultural areas and all sorts of places, right? And he didn't Prabhupada says in the purport, he didn't waste any time in economic development, which, you know, I mean, it's kind of a funny thing to say about a 5-year-old boy, but what he didn't do, you know, putting it like plain and simple, he didn't look for a family to live with. He wasn't thinking like, well, I better find some nice family to live with. I'm only a 5-year-old boy. You know, what am I going to do? Or he didn't, you know, find somebody to become an apprentice and learn a trade so he could support his wife and family when he got older. No. You know, he was fixed in devotional service. As Krishna, you know, said, just from hearing those sages, he was fixed in devotional service. Even at that point, he went on. And Prabhupada confirms that his way of taking it was not just sentiment. In the previous purport, Prabhupada said, this is the way of dragging a sincere soul nearer to God. So in other words, Narada Muni thought that he took it like that. I took it as the special mercy of the Lord, who always desires benediction for his devotees. And Prabhupada confirms in the previous purport that, yeah, that was a fact. That's what was going on. It was special mercy of the Lord. Prabhupada said, this is the way of dragging a sincere soul closer to God, like that. So that was somehow another Krishna's arrangement, you know, that happened. And earlier in the Bhagavatam, in chapter 5, there's a nice passage where, you know, this same point is kind of elaborated upon. I'm going to just read a sentence here. So this is from a verse which is talking about a devotee falling down, but I'm going to expand upon that point. But so Prabhupada says in the purport, he says, even though he, referring to a devotee, falls down, a devotee is never considered the same as a fallen karmi. A karmi suffers the reactions of his own fruitive action, whereas a devotee is reformed by chastisement directed by the Lord himself. See? So in other words, this is the situation of a devotee. A devotee's situation is different from the situation of a non-devotee. Prabhupada explains here that, he says here, a karmi, the non-devotees, they suffer the reactions of their own fruitive actions. That's what's happening to, you know, non-devotees when they're experiencing reverses in their life and difficulties and this and that. It's simply this. They're suffering the reactions of their own fruitive activities. But Prabhupada says that's not the case of devotees. He says, whereas a devotee is reformed by, he's dealt with. I mean, in this, as I said, I was going to expand upon the what was being said here. Whereas a devotee is reformed, rewarded, everything, directed by the Lord himself. See? In other words, Krishna is personally involved with the lives of his devotees. Prabhupada also says in the same purport, a few sentences down, he says, the devotee is always under the vigilance of his capable father. See? So that's the difference. You know, when you become a devotee, Krishna is taking personal care of his devotees. That's my understanding here. What else can these statements mean? You know, directed by the Lord himself, is always under the vigilance of his capable father. Just like to give a, you know, Prabhupada would say, crude analogy. Imagine, you know, like turn back the clock 5 years or something like that when President Obama was still president. One of his daughters came to him and said, hey, Dad, I'm not feeling very well. You know, he would say, well, you know, Obamacare is there, you know. Just, you have Obamacare, just use your Obamacare and, no. He'd say, oh, really? Well, let's take it, you know, he'd take personal care. Oh, let me take you to the doctor. Because it's his family. He's going to take, you know, he's made that arrangement for all the citizens, okay, but with his family, to his own family, he's going to take personal care. So the same way, the devotees are Krishna's family. I mean, once again, it's a crude analogy, but it's like, you know, you become a family member when you become a devotee of Krishna, and Krishna takes personal care. Just like the president would take personal care of his daughter, Krishna's taking personal care of his devotees. And then it makes sense. Then that's why everything's directed by the Lord himself. And whatever happens to the devotee is under the vigilance of his capable father. See? So that's, you know, an important thing to remember. And that's Narada Muni had that faith, and that's why he was able to, when his mother was bitten by a snake and died, he was able to take it as a special mercy of the Lord. And who, you know, and see it as a benediction like that. Because he had that faith that, you know, Krishna's taking personal care of me. I'm trying to be his devotee, and he's personally involved in my life and trying to help me make progress towards, you know, pure devotional service and going back home, back to Godhead. It's an important point to meditate on, and the more we meditate on it, the more serious we should become about engaging in our devotional service. Something we have to be very careful about is to give lip service, to pay, you know, that expression, to pay lip service to devotional service. I looked it up, and what is that, you know, the dictionary definition of what that actually means, and this was the definition and what it meant, to pay lip service. An avowal of advocacy, adherence, or allegiance expressed in words but not backed by deeds. So we don't want to fall into that category where we're just, you know, talking about devotional service, but we're not doing it. You know, an avowal of advocacy, adherence, or allegiance expressed in words but not backed by deeds. So we don't want to, we want to guard against, to be very careful not to come into that realm there. But rather, we want to quote another saying, that put our money, you know, the expression, put our money where our mouth is. Well, we want to put our sadhana where our philosophy is. The definition of that phrase was take action to support one's statements or opinions. See, so that's, we want to be in that category, where we're actually, you know, we're living it. we're, as I say, walking the talk. And we're doing it. We have a particular philosophy which says we should be doing this, that, and the other thing. And we're doing it. We're not just talking about it. You know, we're examples of people who are living this philosophy. That's an important point. And final point is that, you know, we should, another thing we could meditate on is how we're so fortunate to be able to have the guidance of devotee who, you know, the spiritual masters, as we heard in the last class I gave, I mentioned, I read that excerpt from a letter Prabhupada wrote to Jayapataka. He's on the level of either a gopi or a cowherd boy. In other words, we're not just taking direction from, you know, any old devotee. We're getting direction from somebody who's an eternal associate of the Lord, a very confidential associate of the Lord. And I'll read this. I actually read this in when the Runtura gave class, but this was an excerpt from a paragraph from the Chaitanya Charitamrita where the position of the spiritual masters described. It says, the conditioned soul within the material world can neither understand nor appreciate how a pure devotee in the material world can render confidential service to the Lord, have the feelings of ecstatic love, and always engage in pleasing the Supreme Lord's senses. Now here it comes. Although seen within this material world, okay, which they are, the pure devotee always engages in confidential service of the Lord. An ordinary neophyte devotee cannot realize this. Therefore, it is said, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigneha Nabujaya. The activities of a pure Vaishnava cannot be understood even by a learned scholar in the material world. But the one phrase here that really caught my attention was this one here about how, although seen within this material world, the pure devotee always engages in the confidential service of the Lord. So, you know, we're looking, with, you know, we saw Prabhupada. You know, he was here. And but, you know, we have to remind ourselves, if unless you're fortunate, you don't have to remind yourself, but we should always remember that Prabhupada was that. He was a pure devotee. He was always engaged in confidential service of the Lord, you know. Even while he was here. So he might have looked like just another ordinary human being. And, you know, this is the position of the acharyas in general. They might look like, you know, well, there's just another human being. But no, that particular human being or that person, he's engaged in, always engaged in confidential service of the Lord. And that's kind of backed up in that, once again, in the song we sing every morning at Mangalarti, Nikunjayuna Rati Kelly Siddhai, Yayali Bir Yuktira Pekshani, Tatati Daksa Dati Valabasha Pandagiroshi Chanavan. That the spiritual master is very expert in assisting the gopis who are always making different tasteful arrangements for the conjugal pastimes of Radha and Krishna. See? So Prabhupada, once again, referring to that letter I read in the last class to Jayapataka Maharaj, he said that, you know, Vishwanath Chakravarti is saying that because his spiritual master happened to be a manjari like that. And Prabhupada said, but in general, the spiritual master is either to be considered one of the gopis or a cowherd boy. So in other words, gopi, cowherd boy, vatsalya ras, whatever, he's on a super elevated level. You know, we're getting the opportunity to get directions from somebody who's in a eternally liberated soul on a super elevated level of devotional service. So Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitte Te Kodi Akya Arna Kodi. My only wish is to have my consciousness purified by the words emanating from his lotus mouth. In other words, our whole life should simply just be trying to hear the words of the pure devotee and put them into practice in our life. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. That's the life of a devotee. You know, just to hear the pure devotee, even hearing his words is purifying to our consciousness. And then, you know, in addition to that, when we put those words into practice in our life, that's the perfection. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Okay, Granthar Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Motion services.
Yeah, so like you said, it sounds incongruous, just like the time sequence of what Christian said.
But what about